Good afternoon. This Yankee yarn comes from Connecticut, where in Windham County many years ago, a strange and silent figure roamed the highways. He was tall and thin and bent over. His once expensive broadcloth suit was patched in many places and bleached by the sun and rain. His haggard face was pale, and his high beaver hat and leather button shoes were gray from the dust of the country roadways. He seldom looked up and almost never spoke as he trudged along mile after mile, mumbling to himself, his thin, wrinkled hands clasped tightly in front of him. Folks called this old fellow the Old Don Man, or Old Don Coat, and on windy nights when the back door banged, many a kind-hearted Connecticut said, "Go see if there's anyone at the door. It's about time for the Old Don Man to show up." If the aged forlorn figure was there, hat in hand, he'd nod and say politely, "May I come in and get warm? If you let me rest by the fire and lend me a needle and thread to don my coat, I'll be ever so grateful. This wind has about torn me to tatters." This was the Old Don Man, known, pitied, and looked for in many a Connecticut town and village. After he'd warmed his shaking hands at the fire and had a cup of tea, he'd remove his tattered coat, spread it over his bony knees, and go to work with the needle and thread. The patches he put on were neat and well made, and as he rose to go, he'd always look around the room in a wistful way and say softly, "By the way, have you seen a beautiful young lady all dressed in white? She's Josephine, my intended bride. When I find her, we're going to be married, and I want my wedding suit to look nice and neat. You see, I've been wearing it ever since I began looking for Josephine, more than 30 years ago. Well, I'll be going now, and thank you." Only when there was a roaring blizzard outside could he be induced to stay overnight. He was very sensitive. If anyone questioned him or tried to pry into his affairs, he never came back to that house again. He was fond of strong tea, and he never would take but one meal, no matter how long he was storm-stayed. Mrs. George Upham of Newtonville told me that when the Old Don Man stayed overnight at her father-in-law's house in East Woodstock, Connecticut, he put a whole handful of tea in the pot, drank it black, and he always asked for extra pillows so he could sleep bolstered up in bed. Usually, he was up and gone before breakfast on his endless, hopeless search for his Josephine. If I could peek into some of the scrapbooks tucked away in New England attics, I could tell you about other places he stopped at. For the Hartford Courant, Springfield Republican, and Providence Journal often mentioned him in their columns, and he was always described the same way. Tall and spare, with a student stoop, as they used to say. Always looking at the ground, as if in the gravel he expected to find a dainty, familiar footprint. The Old Don Man wore a weather-beaten, bell-crowned hat, which he kept carefully brushed. His swallowtail coat was double-breasted and buttoned, and below it, at his narrow, thin waist, the edges of a once gaily colored vest protruded, neatly darned. His trousers were of the old-fashioned kind, long, tight-fitting, and with straps at the bottom. Only his shoes changed from year to year. Even the best leather wears out quickly on country roads. A rusty black silk fob dangled from his watch pocket, and he took his heavy gold timepiece from his pocket many times a day to stare at it, shake his head sadly, then gaze up and down the road with a dazed, dreamy expression. In spite of the excellent quality of broadcloth, his wedding suit had, by constant wear and the accidents of travel, become threadbare. But he patched it as well as he could, and no amount of arguing could ever make him change that suit for another one. Frequently, when he was a guest, the Old Don Man would be observed poking around the parlor of some fine old Connecticut homestead. If anyone asked, "Did you lose something?" he'd say, "Oh, my, yes. I was polishing a wedding ring, and I dropped it. If you find it after I'm gone, will you hold it till I return?" Then he'd smile wistfully and whisper, "It's for a small and very beautiful hand, my Josephine's." His own hands, now thin and wrinkled, were like an artist's or musician's. And on the tapering third finger of his left hand, there was a plain gold band, which he constantly twirled with his thumb. A Worcester listener writes me that the Old Don Man was most fastidious about his personal appearance. Whenever he stayed at his relative's house overnight, he'd always borrow a razor and shave, so he'd be fresh and clean for the next day's journey. "My Josephine wouldn't recognize me with whiskers," he'd explain. I'll be going now to look for her. Thank ye kindly, and God bless all of you. According to an old undated newspaper clipping, this tragic state of mind was brought about by a terrible shock the dying man suffered when he was young. On the morning of his wedding day, he arose early, dressed with great care, called a carriage, and was driven to the wharf to meet his bride, who was coming from New York. They were to be married at high noon. As he stepped from the carriage, he was met by a grim-faced sailor who wasted no words. "I have bad news for you, sir. The schooner was lost last night with all hands." "My sympathy, sir." All hands included the captain and his lovely young passenger who had gone to New York to get her bridal gown. Unwilling to believe that his Josephine was gone forever, the grief-stricken lover raced through the village calling her name. As he ran along the cliffs, by nightfall he was far out of town, wandering in a daze along the shore. This incident, which really happened, appealed to the late Reverend Charles Goodell of Dudley, Massachusetts. And in 1906, he wrote it up for Success magazine. So many Connecticut readers wanted more details, Reverend Mr. Goodell expanded the story into a small book, which was published by Funk and Wagnalls. In the introduction, the author says, "I have used such facts and authenticated incidents as could be gathered. If I have used the license of the novelist, it was because some details are unknown. I have tried to be true to the spirit of the old Don Man." Mr. Goodell gives names and places in his story, and I'd like to know whether they are factual or fictitious. If after hearing his version you have any information, I'd like to hear from you. There were two things, Mr. Goodell says, that Captain James Alden of New London loved above all others: his ship and his daughter, both named Josephine. The vessel was a sturdy whaler, and the girl slim, pretty, and vivacious, ready to flirt with her young male companions, but saving her heart till the right man came along. He arrived, so the story goes, through the efforts of the school committee to find a suitable boarding place for the new schoolmaster. His name was Frank Howland, and he didn't mind a bit being quartered with Captain Alden and his charming daughter. Josephine liked him immediately, and one night after supper she told her father, "Frank is a very nice young man. His folks come from Cape Cod, and he's a direct descendant of the John Howland who came over in the Mayflower." The captain eyed his daughter quizzically. "You ain't stuck on him, be ye?" It was a case of love at first sight, and when Frank Howland asked Josephine to marry him, she hesitated. "I'll think about it, Frank, but I want to be sure that you'll not run off to sea like all the other husbands around here. I've seen too many ships sail out of port never to come back, and too many funerals without casket or corpse. I hate the sea. I dream of it, reaching its cold green arms to gather me in." Frank folded her in his arms and wiped away the tears and said gaily, "Never you worry, my sweet. I'm a teacher, not a seafaring man." A few months later, they announced their engagement. The captain was tickled pink. "Josie," he said, "you shall go over to New York and get all the fancy duds you want. Captain Tabor's new schooner, the Hope On, is going to sail next Wednesday, and I'll see that you and Sally Gifford have passage." Sally Gifford was the same seamstress who had made her mother's wedding gown, and no happier girl ever sailed out of New London to get her trousseau in New York than Miss Josephine Alden. Well, they stayed a week in the big city, did their shopping and saw the sights, and when their trunks were safely stored aboard the schooner, they sailed for New London. It was fine and clear when they cleared Hellgate, but out in the Sound, a raw nor'easter kicked up a choppy sea, and by midnight, the gale had become a hurricane. Bravely, the good ship struggled against wind and wave, but late the next day, a giant incoming swell swept the schooner onto a rocky ledge, and she broke in two. In a matter of minutes, she settled neath the cold green sea. A shore patrol from the life-saving station reported, "We sighted her distress signals just before she struck. And just before the bow went under, we saw a girl, all dressed in white, running up forward. After that, we didn't see anything." 3 days later, the bodies of Captain Tabor and the dressmaker Sally Gifford washed ashore. But no trace of Josephine Alden was ever found. Mr. Goodell says in his story, "Young Howland was found wandering unconscious. Then a fever set in, and for weeks his mind was a blank. He didn't even know that a service was held for his intended bride. But as soon as he was able, he put on his wedding suit and started to look for her. For over 25 years, he trudged around the Connecticut countryside, asking all whom he met, 'Have you seen a beautiful young lady all dressed in white?' She's Josephine. And when I find her, we'll be married. See? I have the ring right here in my pocket. According to Reverend Goodell, the old Don man came to a tragic end on a beautiful moonlight night. He was trudging along the highway quite unmindful of an approaching team. When the horses shied, the wagon swerved and struck him, knocking the old man to the ground. He was picked up and carried into a nearby farmhouse. And as he lay dying, the old Don man whispered faintly, "What a long time to wait, my dear. But nothing matters now, now that we are together." Closing his eyes, he said softly, "I, Frank, take thee, Josephine, to be my wedded wife until death do us part." The folks who were in that house say that a beautiful smile came to the old wrinkled face, and for a fleeting moment, it was young and strong and happy. And that was the way the old Don man of Connecticut came to the end of his long, sad journey. If you would like to have a copy of this story, you'll find it in the forthcoming fall issue of Your Home in New England. And that magazine will be on the newsstands early in October. If you like stories about unusual coincidences, hoodooed ships and sailors' superstitions, I have a story for next week about the Bucksport-built square rigger N.T. Hill, which mysteriously vanished at sea with all hands while on her maiden voyage. This is a strange story, which I think you'll be interested in. And if you've never heard about the man who was buried sitting up in a Morris chair, listen to Yankee Yarn's 2 Weeks from Today.